dinner hall of life.
Welcome to the Inner Ho Uprising, the podcast about sex, love, and dating from the perspective of me, Sam, one black, non-monogamous, pansexual, feminist, sheltering in place, ho, who lives in New York City and whose pronouns are she and her.
Me, Rodeca, a fat, black, pansexual pessimist who probably cries too much and uses humor to distract everyone from the fact that we are currently in the darkest timeline, and my pronouns are she and her.
There's a lot of P's in your intro, huh?
There's a lot of P's. I was trying to, you know... Got a little alliteration going on, you know, so you could taste it, so you could feel it.
Pee pee. Every
sorry. Every childish. It works though.
Every episode of the Inner Hole Uprising works just like this, pee-pee jokes. Myself and my lovely rotating co-hosts talk to folks, talk about sex, love, and dating as it pertains to current events in the world, our lives, and yours, and occasionally we hit you with interviews from insightful folks. On this week's episode, we're talking all about conspiracy theories, what sex work looks like during a pandemic, how to have an MTV Cribs virtual date, sheltering in place with toxic family members, talking about your Rona mental health with your partner, and much, much more. And quick programming note, next week we're taking a week off. We'll be back with weekly episodes resuming April 29th.
If you'd like to follow along with the conversation had in this podcast on social media, you can do so by using the hashtag InnerHoeUprising so we can see it and the hashtag PodIn so other people can see it. And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at InnerHoeUprising without the G on Twitter, InnerHoeUprising on Instagram and Facebook. And you can join our Facebook group by searching InnerHoeUprising Community. That's CUMMUNITY. Head over to innerhoeuprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Pay a Ho, or check out our merchandise.
And if you would like to pay us to speak virtually at your school or conference about sex positivity, black feminism, podcasting, or other kinds of topics that we discuss on this here show, we would love to. We would also love to host a consent, pleasure, or dating workshop for your organization, also virtually. To book us, you can send us a line to ihupodcast@gmail.com. And now we're going to talk about the hoes of the week this week. So hoes of the week are the people who we shout out, the homies who have supported IHU in the past week. Hoes of week also get special nicknames, and the game, if they choose to participate, is that they can guess the meaning behind their nicknames, which no one has actually done. So I guess you guys don't like the game.
They just accept, or maybe you're just still working, and they don't want to know where it comes from. They're just like, all right, Sam gave it to us, so fuck it.
Maybe they think it has like dark origins or something like that.
It probably,
you know,
does.
What some of them may some of them very well may. Okay, so first up, we got Brianna, a.k.a. Balls Anna, who became a patron. And that is a very loving nickname, Brianna. So I just want you to know that. We have Jason, a.k.a. Vorheezy, who upped their pledge on Patreon. Thank you very much, Jason. We have Orion, a.k.a., let me get this right, an aura, who sent a donene. And we have Sean, a.k.a. Tell All, who also sent a donene via PayPal. Also, shout out to everyone who participated in last week's Monday Night Live, a bi-weekly live show that I do for our $5 and up patrons. So this week we played Jeopardy. Shout out to Malini, Martini, Tougher Than Nigerian Hair, and our winners, Dr. E, Erlini, and Tweewee. Jeopardy on Patreon Live is always very, very
I'm
fun.
Noticing a trend with a lot of names ending with an I.
Yeah, it started like with Tweewee, and then I just stayed in the place.
I feel it.
I stayed in the place. Also, an announcement to our winner of the hoe bag sweepstakes, Diana Diaz. Diana, please respond to the email in your inbox and claim your prize. And congratulations for winning that sweepstakes. Look out for more sweepstakes in the future, everybody. If you would like to be a hoe of the week and get a cool nickname, here are some other things that you can do. You can leave us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can shout us out in an article you've written or in a post on social media. These are the non-monetary ways you can support us. We love monetary and non-monetary support. And we also understand that in these very uncertain times, monetary support is not feasible for many folks. So please do not spend your last dollar on us. Put you and yours first. But if you can spare some change, here are some monetary things you can do to become Hoe of the Week and get a nickname. You can donate to us on PayPal at paypal.me/innerhoe. You can become a patron on Patreon at patreon.com/innerhoeuprising. Now, let's get into Bay of the Week this week combined with self-care tip of the week.
Wow.
Doubling up. We got to double up. Double cup love. So this week, this bay of the week slash self-care tip of the week will start with a person and lead into an action. So my bay of the week this week is Patrice Peck. Patrice is a freelance journalist. Her bylines include the New York Times recently, which is really dope. Congratulations, Patrice.
Yay!
BuzzFeed, the LA Times, Elle, and Ebony. So Patrice is my bay of the week this week because of her newly founded newsletter titled Coronavirus News for Black Folks, and also because she hosted a virtual panel over the weekend titled Coronavirus Conspiracies and the Black Community. Conspiracy theories and misinformation in this time has been really, really frustrating and hard for me to deal with. So I actually really appreciate Patrice's work in this space. Mm. And I think it's so important nowadays that we stay up with facts on how this pandemic is affecting us. And by us, I mean Black people specifically. And also it's important to navigate how we speak with folks in our communities, like our elders, about some of the information that's coming out. So I don't know if you've dealt with this, Rodeca, but
5G bullshit. Is that what you mean?
Not just the 5G bullshit, but just like all bullshit, all conspiracy theories. Like,
it started off with Black people not being able to get it in general.
Right. Which was a really harmful one, like, because now we see that all Black, everybody who has it is Black, actually.
And it's like ravaging the communities in general. Right, so it's just like, yes, you were wrong about that. But also just like, the 5G thing, the whole, like, they're implanting it, and I don't know, just like, oh, North Korea said that they were going to give us a Christmas present. Do you think this is what the Christmas present was? A lot. Like, and it's people who, I really think that they're joking sometimes, until it's other people are just like, yeah, thanks for that information. And it just spreads like wildfire.
Right, exactly. So yeah, all of those things, that's something that's always really bothered me, and something that has been hard for me to like come to terms with, because I understand that really, really bad things have happened and actual conspiracies have happened specifically to Black people in this country, like the Tuskegee experiment and like forced sterilizations and COINTELPRO and all of these things. So it's hard to navigate talking about conspiracy theories that are not true and thus harmful, because they're like pushing people in a direction towards potential inaction, like, oh, Black people can't get coronavirus, so I don't care about social distancing, and mitigating that with actual conspiracies that have happened. So I really appreciated this live, because it kind of like, she spoke to three different Black people. One person was a psychologist, one person has a book all about conspiracy theories in the Black community, and one person is an activist at a Black Youth Project and a writer also at Black Youth Project. And they kind of like helped me with my approach and how I think going forward I'm going to address conspiracy theories that pop up with like my peers and my elders and things like that. And basically, like, one of the things that I really found good from that live was that everybody was just like, have grace with people, because, well, have grace and also like acknowledge someone's intention for sharing a conspiracy theory, because I think the people who start these are shitty people, because you're just like starting something based on nothing and you're trying to spread a misinformation. But the people down the line who find it where they're at and like are just sharing it because they think it's actually a thing and they want to like protect their communities, I think like we should deal with those people with more grace.
And I wouldn't even think about it that way. Like, to be honest with you, my first intention is just like going off and just being upset. But I think the reason why, like you said, the reason why they're sharing it is because they're genuinely like, if this is true, just look out for this, et cetera, et cetera, as opposed to being like, y'all just don't even give a fuck, and you're just trying to make people hurt in the long run. So I don't think that's what it is. And even just thinking about it that way kind of makes me feel a little better, just because I'm like, nah, I'll be getting tight. Like, it's just upsetting.
Same. Yeah. It's painful to see that kind of stuff. It's definitely painful to see that kind of stuff. Misinformation is super, super detrimental, especially in times like these where you need information to like change how you're going to navigate society. That's why I also appreciate Patrice's newsletter, because it's specifically targeted towards Black people and how the coronavirus is specifically impacting us. So you can sign up for that newsletter and you can watch the panel about conspiracy theories. You can sign up for the newsletter at speakpatrice.substack.com, which will be in the show notes. And you can watch that panel on Patrice's Instagram at speakpatrice, which will also be in the show notes. And also, while we're here speaking about information and factuals, shameless plug myself and my team over at In Those Jeans podcast, in addition to doing our normal episodes, have also been doing updates specifically focused on science in the Black community regarding coronavirus week after week. So to stay up to date and uplifted on things of that nature, I would definitely recommend you listen to those. Listening links to In Those Jeans will be in the show notes.
No shame in that. We out here giving out the information to the people.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are. Now a word from us kids. Remember that from PBS?
Yes.
Now our segment called Fuck That, which is our current event segment. And today we're talking all about sex work. Rebecca has a comprehensive list of the ways. Yeah, a deep dive of the ways that coronavirus is affecting sex work, both pause yes. and neg.
Yes. So sex work during the coronavirus. I'm kind of looking at it from a couple of different perspectives. First, we're going to talk about how life on the street or basically just in-person sex work has been kind of bleak and not exactly the way that it used to be, which obviously is shitty. A couple different places that they've had articles about. Tokyo, an estimated 300,000 people visit the Kabukicho's 300 sex-related businesses each day. So dozens of sex workers in one... Yeah, I know, right? You wouldn't even think about a whole district because it's so different from our lives. But dozens of sex workers in one of Japan's biggest red light districts have been infected with the coronavirus, which may be behind the explosion of cases that have left local hospitals pretty much scrambling and trying to figure out how to manage it. So officials in Kobukicho reported that a sharp increase in infections linked to the adult entertainment area, with most cases among the women and working the clubs and men scouting for women there. The nature of the sex work, obviously, it makes it almost inevitable for it to spread, and it's impossible to trace because for safety, sex workers are not disclosing their own information as well as not disclosing the information of the people who are their clients, just for because of the fact that it's just not the nature of their business. So it's hard to track where it's coming from and how to stop it, or like just pretty much where the trend is. So that's become difficult in Tokyo.
Is sex work legal in Japan?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking it up and it looks like Japan's quote-unquote anti-prostitution law of 1956 only applies to penetrative sex. So like folks who work in the red light district circumvent that by, you know, using oral sex, anal sex, and other kinds of non-penetrative sex in, I guess, the red light district. It seems like stigma...
Mm-hmm. I was just about to say. And there's probably a lot of people who just like stigma, but also... we don't know what the relationship those people have outside of them visiting
the
district.
Yeah, like I might be cheating on my wife or something.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So it's just like, I don't want to risk that. Or maybe somebody just, again, stigma, regardless of whether or not it's legal, it's still surrounding certain things.
Anything operating in the dark is like so detrimental, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Like, that really freaking sucks. That really freaking sucks. Is there any, I don't know if you know this, is there any like actions by the well, first of all, Tokyo wasn't even trying to social distance. So
yes.
I don't even know why they're blaming sex workers right now, because the whole city should have been shut down in the first place.
Yeah.
But like the whole country should have been shut down, and now they're about to see the ramifications of that. But
because they're still talking about like they're not really doing anything to mitigate that. They're talking about how like it is like, oh, it's definitely coming from the nightlife area, and they say how like people are just on top of each other, and it's a whole bunch of different, because they Tokyo goes up, like all of the businesses are on top of each other in a way that even in New York we don't see, because it's just everyone's on top of each other. So they're talking about it in the article, and they're like obviously concerned about it, but they're not saying like we need to shut it down or anything like that. They're just saying, hey, we know where it's coming from, and yeah, it sucks.
Interesting.
But it's such a, I think it's just a lucrative part of their economy that to think about shutting it down, they're just not even thinking about it.
It ain't no economy when everybody's dead.
Yeah.
There's no.
And that's where they're heading. It's very unfortunate, but that is where they're heading, just based off of the fact that it's just, you can see where it's coming from, but you're not doing anything to stop it.
Right. I was also going to say it would make sense, since it's not illegal here, that they provide like a stimulus package to sex workers so that they don't feel compelled to.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the perfect world that we don't live in. Okay, what's going on in Germany?
Well, in Germany, thousands of sex workers working in Germany have been made homeless after brothels are being closed down to the coronavirus outbreak, and borders are being shut and making it difficult for people to return home. Of the estimated 100,000 to 200,000 sex workers in Germany, about 80% are foreign, mainly in Bulgaria, Romania, mainly from Bulgaria, Romania, Poland, and Ukraine. So they come to Germany with nothing, hoping to earn money, and that's kind of where they go. So it's a huge part of their sex worker population. And now they're either staying with friends or living on the street. And some of the brothels, even though they're not open for people to come in, they are hosting the sex workers and just people in general, or some people are staying with the owners just at their house, just because that's their family at that point. But they don't really have a place to go. And Germany is doing exactly what they should be doing by closing it down. And it is legal there as well. It's been legal for about 2 decades, but they did shut it down along with what they consider non-essential businesses like restaurants and nightclubs to slow the spread of the virus. But in Germany, they sex workers are classified as self-employed. So they pay taxes and are, in theory, entitled to financial assistance from a fund that's been set up by the government to help freelancers through the pandemic. But most of the time, sex workers are working illegally still, just because they're not paying their taxes and they're not like really on the grid. They're just doing what they kind of off the books work, like a lot of people do. So they don't really know that if they had been paying their taxes and doing it, they would be entitled to help. So they're just basically soliciting people on the street in the most old fashioned way and trying to make ends meet until the brothels reopen. So the demand for paid sex, which I've noticed across the board, is still there, as we've noticed. And you'll see that there's other ways that it's actually become more popular, but paid sex, it's still demanding and there's still people who want it, but the risk of catching the virus is great. And the women are taking the risk because they don't have any other choice.
You know what I don't like in these conversations, like, because I've had conversations like this with like people like, oh, I still want to get my hair done. I want to get my wax. I want to get my nails done. And a barber, whatever, all those kinds of things. And like, my gut reaction is like, no, don't fucking do that. And then like the response is like, oh, but you know, these people need money. But like, you know, you're a person who has money to like, you still have money to spend on these non-essential services for yourself. Yeah. And yeah, sure, these people do need money. So like, stay your ass at home and like, put some money in your favorite sex workers' Cash App.
Yep.
No, like, is that not?
You think to yourself, like, if your reasoning is, hey, these people need money, I might as well give them a service.
Give them fucking money then.
Out. Like, yeah, you know what like, I mean? And I know people who are doing that. Like, for me, I'm trying to, obviously, in my situation, I'm trying to make sure I can pay my rent.
You don't got no job, nigga. You don't got no time to play with that.
But I'm saying, like, people who are just like, yeah, I'm still working remotely or whatever. I know a few people who are, like, donating or having conversations. And I'm like, that's what you should be doing. Saying, like, you need to get your nails done for what? Like, I understand that's a part of your self-worth. But you're not going anywhere, B. You don't need to do any of these things.
You don't need to do it. You don't need to do it.
We're all suffering. Like, because it's everyone's going through it, it should, I don't know. I don't know how people think about it. Obviously, I'm not going to minimize, oh, maybe nails is what makes you feel sexy, et cetera, whatever. But you know that, like, donate that money to your nail dresser. So when they do open up, they give you that discount. You good.
And they're alive to do it, my nigga.
Yeah.
They're alive to do it. Like, what the fuck? Another comment I have about this, and maybe, like, people who live in Germany can weigh in. Mm-hmm. I'm curious if people who are sex workers in Germany are just doing it because they don't know how, because they're coming from different countries or whatever, or like, is there something about engaging in government regulated sex work that is turning them off, you know?
Yeah, like why they aren't especially if they can get assistance, if they can do all that type of stuff.
Yeah,
maybe that I'm not sure. Maybe they don't, I was thinking maybe because of the fact that a lot of them are foreign, they're just coming here and they may not necessarily like have the papers for it or any of that type of stuff, because they also just can't go home. They're just stuck. And because it's such a huge part of their population, I'm not sure.
maybe it's like, you know, we talked about this a couple of episodes ago where like, yes, there is gray area between exploitation in sex work. Like someone can say, I want to engage in sex work, but they can still be exploited by somebody and like trafficked if they're not engaging with the right person. I wonder if that's what's happening. Like people who are bringing people into Germany or showing them the ropes of sex work are not showing them the real ropes so that they don't even have to pay taxes on their income or something like that.
Yeah.
You know,
maybe like it's just corrupted along the way. That's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Germans, let us know.
Please.
Let us noin. No, that's not how you say it now. All right. Let us know about the U.S.
Sorry. So now in the U.S., close to their home, the New York Post actually wrote an interesting article looking into the lives of three sex workers and just kind of seeing a snapshot of what it is now in their lives. I found one very interesting. Her name was Anna. She is a Brooklyn-based sex worker, and she still sees her regulars despite the social distancing measures that are going on. She does say that business is down 80% because at this point, the cases have grown to almost 1,857,000 across the globe. So it's just a lot. And that's causing business to go down. She said, before the virus came, I was seeing one or two clients a day, making around $200, $300 a day. And now she's living on $300 a week, which is a huge difference between literally night and day. Unlike employees being laid off from mainstream or legal and tax jobs in America, from legal and mainstream businesses that are taxed, she's ineligible for unemployment benefits. So she's faced with basically deciding whether or not she's going to do in-person stuff just to make ends meet. And she continues to do it. She is risking her own life and everyone else's just so that she can earn money. But I remember in the article, she has a 17-year-old daughter, and like things don't just stop just because, you know, she can't work her regular business. Several local and national organizations like Sex Workers Outreach Projects have launched online fundraisers to help providers survive in this uncertain time. But right now, it's just not looking like you're going to get any type of stimulus package that we're all getting. It's just not the same.
Yeah, as in you won't be able to, or you won't be eligible for unemployment.
She's not taking on new clients, but she's limiting herself to 5 or 6 familiar people that she kind of works with. And she tries to be as careful as she can. So she's taking showers before and after the sessions, rinsing her mouth with Listerine. But it's also coming with a new screening that she does. So she screens her clients before the transaction by talking to them about how they feel and if they're experiencing any symptoms. And then she does like an exploratory massage. So she's feeling their skin to check to see if they're feverish, if they're sweating. She's watching to see if they're coughing or sneezing and looking to see if their eyes are red. Obviously, that's just like a surface level type of thing, doing what she can to make sure that she's not being exposed. But there are some people who are asymptomatic. There's a lot of still inherent risks. And when it comes down to actual sex, she doesn't allow clients to kiss her like she usually used to do. She's also sanitizing her hands and their private parts and rubbing alcohol over everything like the beds and their hands and all that type of stuff. And she doesn't wear a face mask or gloves because, according to her, that's weird and it would scare a person away. And they wouldn't pay $100 to have a massage with a pair of gloves because, you know, warmth and all that type of stuff. Mm-hmm. But those other stories are also like just talking in a similar vein where it's just nearly impossible to do. If you're doing social distancing, you're not going to be able to do the work that you need to in the same capacity. I mean, even just having that screening process has affected the intimacy of the situation and all type of stuff. So it's just, in America especially, it's just very much affecting everything. It's not legal. So you're doing you're not getting any type of support. And it's just become difficult.
Damn.
So with that being said, it's now people going onto digital platforms. So OnlyFans is seeing an amazing increase in service. So there's 16 million people now unemployed in the United States, and they've applied for benefits in the last 3 weeks. So that has caused a rush of people to go to a new form of work, which is live broadcast. So they're generally called cam models, and they strip or dance on camera while viewers message them. The performers work for tips to accommodate laws that regulate sex work. Darren Parker, the vice president of Cam Soda, said there was a 37% increase in new model signups just in March in comparison to March of last year.
Wow.
For the same period, Bella French, the co-founder and CEO of ManyVids, another camming site, said there was a 69% increase in the new model signups.
Hi-oh.
Yeah, 69. They had to have known. They should have just
put it was like probably that. 70 and they fucking fudged the numbers.
They just went right back. Like, look, they're going to appreciate this. But this growth is also met with a recent influx of new viewers as well. So at Camp Soda, the number of new viewers to the site has doubled this year when comparison to early 2019. There's also an increase in viewership as well as models, as you said. So the competition is much fiercer to stand out, causing many OG cam models to lose business. Basically, it's just like, obviously, like anything, if a whole bunch of people are coming in, it's hard to stand out when you've been doing it and you're making a certain type of money. Now you're sharing it with hundreds of new people.
The market is flooded, as they say.
Exactly, exactly. That is what they say. Before the pandemic, some models participated in other forms of sex work like stripping, pornography, and escort services. And others worked at bars in the evening, cams when they had the time, office jobs, you know, regular stuff. It was sometimes part-time. And now they're doing it full-time and they're spending many more hours online trying to make ends meet. There was a cam model called Allie Awesome who works 60 hours a week. Her workday begins right after waking up and she just checks on her social media and just goes on it for the entire day.
Wow.
There's Valentine, a sex worker in Oregon. She's concerned with the amount of people that are coming in that they don't consider the socio-political context of the work. So it's just a whole bunch of people who come on and they want to kind of dip their toe in it. And they're like, she's like, sure, do it. Create an OnlyFans, start camming. But that means you have to support sex workers all year round now. Mm-hmm. You can't just dip in and out of the work because you think it's easy and then trashes in the end.
Right.
So yeah, that's good. It's a whole bunch of people coming in. It's affecting people who have already been there. But it's also, I don't know, you kind of feel like people are stealing money from you in a way. Because it's just like, I've been doing this. It's the only thing that I can do. And now it's kind of a hobby. So I can see that it's greatly affected in a lot of ways.
I also think that that's going to come out in, like, now you see this rise in people. And obviously, there's also a rise in people who are viewers of these kinds of cam services. Mm-hmm. So at first, everybody's going to go everywhere. But I think the people who have been doing it professionally and are seasoned and are veterans are going to
stand out.
In my opinion, they're going to come out in the end because, like, you could be a hobby fucking person or you can actually know what to do. And that's going to show in your work.
It's going to show in your work. It's going to show in how you organize your time. It's going to be people who are just like, I just wanted to do this for fun. And granted, I mean, there's no time like the present. If you were thinking about doing it and it's something that you want to take seriously, I don't think there's any harm in like new people coming in and just trying it because they were nervous to do it before. But like when someone takes it seriously and it's what they want to do, you're going to see them coming on consistently. You're going to see them like, you know, the variety in their show and all that type of stuff, that would make a difference. That would definitely have people more interested. So hopefully it's not like it has only been like, I think for March, that's usually what the statistics are based on. Maybe April and May will be like, well, now everything's gone down and the people who have been doing it are still there. Then there's also another business that is increasing and kind of flourishing, that is the sugaring business. So Seeking Arrangement, the world's largest sugar daddy dating website, has also seen an increase in interested partners. Worldwide, the site has seen a member increase of 74%. Damn.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a lot compared to this time last year. In Massachusetts specifically, that number is at 86%. There is an 82% increase in sugar daddies, while there's a slightly higher increase, 87%, in sugar babies. This is in Massachusetts. So they kind of focus on that because it's such a big bottleneck spike of a there. Bubble.
Yeah,
exactly. So Sarah Street, who lives in downtown Boston, hasn't been personally impacted by the coronavirus because she has her sugar daddy available for money and advice when she needs it. So I know it's just a different world for
must
her.
Must be nice. She said, I haven't been impacted at all, son. I'm like, whoa, at all? Sheesh.
She has her own job, but like that, once she lost it, he just kind of was like, yeah, I got you. So this is to say that while every relationship is different, it's not uncommon for sugar daddies to help pay rent, bills, or for meals. And usually they go on expensive experiences like vacation, restaurants, or shopping trips. But with the stay-at-home orders, they're now kind of changing what their gifts are. So people are paying for groceries. They're paying for them to have a roof over their head, all that type of stuff. She was saying it looks a lot different than it did before. It's not necessarily a Louis Vuitton handbag, but it's still really sweet. It is fucking sweet as hell to get somebody to pay her. So I guess it makes sense. It correlates to people going like, fuck it, like somebody's gonna pay this shit because I don't have anything. And the guys aren't really being affected as much because it's also an increase in sugar daddies in general. So it's just a different world for the upper class. They're
yeah, niggas is just living different. Wow. Let me find out.
It makes you want to sign up. Like, okay, shit.
I like the statistic where you're like, it was 82% increase in sugar daddies and 87% increase in babies. So it's like, yeah. They're really toe for, like, there's no bubble mm-hmm. here. It's like yeah. equal supply and demand.
Because when I first read it, I was like, I thought it was just the babies, because that, to me, in my head, I'm like, that makes sense.
Yeah, like, duh, let me try. Right.
But the guys are like, or just the daddies in general are going on there and like, nah, I got it too. Like, I know you want it, so.
Yeah, I don't have anywhere else to go. Yeah, I have nothing exactly. else to spend this on. Wow. That we love to see.
And nice. Speaking of new people that are getting in the game, there's a new kind of phenomenon going on in the form of IG Lives. But also they're just lives in general that have kind of taken its own form of strip clubs. So strip clubs, like every other non-essential business, have been shut down. But there are people using Instagram to fill the gap left for exotic dancing. So for the past 3 weeks, Justin LaBoy, okay. He sounds like somebody I know. But
side notes, we went to high school with this nigga, and I know that for a fact.
We did not.
Yes, we did. Yes, we absolutely did.
Are you serious?
I'm so serious. And I was like, wait, is that the same nigga? And it definitely is him. What the fuck?
Was he a senior? Wait, what?
I think he was like a senior. I think he was like a senior when we were hold on, let me send you a link. I hope that works. You see him?
We fully went to high school with this dude. Holy shit.
That school produced a lot of interesting people, and that's all I'll say. Like, there's just a lot of, I guess maybe it's because there were like 5,000 kids per year. So by chance, and this is New York, you're just going to get some, like, there's a fucking Olympian who went to that school. There's us.
I'm shook.
I knew he was a basketball player, and I thought that he went to play overseas.
Wow. Okay. Well, so now, Justin LaBoy, the homie.
We did not know this nigga, but we saw him.
Not at all. And a social media personality, and Justin Dior Combs. I did not know his middle name was Dior.
Me neither. It's a very P. Diddy thing to do.
Yeah. He is P. Diddy's son and an entrepreneur, apparently. And they have been hosting virtual pop-up strip clubs on Instagram Live. So Sasha, a dancer who's been featured on the show, she says, if it wasn't for Justin and his lives, I don't know what I would have done or how I would have paid any of my bills or gotten food in my house. So
which Justin are they referring to?
Justin LaBoy, you know,
but P. Diddy's son is also Justin.
Is this
Justin squared? What is this?
But that's not even a name. They should have cashed on that. They should have known, like, that's two of them. Anyway,
they gotta hire us, man. Let's try to listen. You're unemployed. I'm about to be very underemployed in like a week. Let's get it where we live, son.
Let's do it. Why not? Hit him up like, yo, we went to Doza together, bro. Come on.
Queens. Anyway,
so other people, other strip clubs and establishments have been doing similar lives where Magic City, we all know Magic City, or we should, if you don't, look it up. It's a strip club in Atlanta, and they're offering virtual lap dance performances on Instagram stories. Tory Lanez, his quarantine radio, he also has people who are on his dance nights. For 7 million people, they're doing the same thing. But LaBoy's is apparently really popular, so people like The Weeknd, Diplo, Shaq, Meek Mill, YG, Casanova, and Lil Yachty have all tuned in.
Interesting.
And the idea originally came from them just kind of being bored, and they wanted to create a party vibe. So they were like, yo, where are my demons at? Which is like something that they just coined, and the people knew to just be like, I'm a demon, so they came forward and they were requesting on the live.
Is that like a nigga thing that we don't know about? Like, was that a pre thing?
Yeah, I did. Like, literally, it said, like, you were just like, yo, where are my demons at? And I'm like, I'm a demon, boo. And they just came forward. So wow. The demons came out and they started twerking and taking their clothes off.
Wow.
But that was like the first, yeah, I know.
It was full nude.
Full new. I've seen them myself. It's full new.
You've
bro.
Been like, to Justin Squared nightclub.
Justin sessions live, you know. One person just had like the butt plug in there and it was just going off, and I was like, okay, wow. Yes, it was a time. But after the first couple of sessions, the Justins felt like they shouldn't be doing this for free. So what they started doing was they were pinning the dancers' Cash App on the top of the feed or the bottom of, so that followers can send them money. And the Respectfully Justin show was born. That's what they call it.
I like Justin Squared better.
Do you really? Yeah, Justin Squared is better. But because Instagram prohibits explicit content, what Mr. LaBoy does, so that's the question that they're referring to, he creates a new Instagram handle for each event. So he announces on his page through Twitter along with the date and time of the show. And then people just flood on that page and he gets like 30,000 followers in a matter of minutes. Wow. And everyone's just ready for the show. So the women, or as the audience calls them, is very heteronormative. So there's not a lot of other representation. So the women, or as the audience calls them, demons, are encouraged to request to join the stream. So he goes on there. But what he also does is, after he pins her information, usually when there's no one on the screen, he'll also pin his own Cash App information. And once everyone's done, anybody who participated, he splits it. I'm sure not evenly, because he probably makes his own money, but he does also top them off with some of the money that he gets as well, personally. Usually they also get tips that they come back. So they're making good money from it. Somebody, Alexis, said that she made about $18,000. From dancing during a time when she would have otherwise had no work. She said that it also far outpaces what she would have previously earned in the club. So if she's in a club, she's there for 8 hours. On Instagram Live, she's there for 5 minutes. And that's where she's just making like a ton of money. People are also asking her to send voice notes just saying their name for $500. I'm letting y'all know now, I will say your name in any fashion. 500 motherfuckers.
All right, well, now you got to do it. Let's think of a name. Justin, obviously, give it a go.
That sounds sexy enough.
I didn't hear you. Let me.
Justin LaBoy.
Now starting at number 5, Justin LaBoy. That would be me. And niggas would be like, I'm actually deducting money from your Cash.
Yeah, people would be upset. Like,
send me $20 because
you're wasting time.
Well, maybe with training. That's dope.
I'll try. I need somebody to help me.
We got to recruit Akua. It's a whole business.
Akua be killing it. I mean, hey, I've been there for those ads. I'm like, yes, I'll fucking download it. Also, another positive, if they've created a demon community where the women who go on there and the lives together, they've kind of coined it as a sisterhood where they're just like, hey, girl, you getting on? Yeah, I'm getting on. And they just like do it together. And a good thing for safety is they don't perform with their faces and they remain anonymous outside of their Instagram usernames. So some people, like Sasha, wear ski masks while they dance, and others just film from the waist down. She makes sure to try and keep her identity offline, separate from the work that she does outside of that. And they said that people have like moms. Obviously, people are coming from all different walks of life. So it's something where they can make their money, but also be safe, have fun, create a community. And I don't know. Instagram just kind of stepped up and was like, look, we're going to do, I don't know how people just automatically made it into lives, but it was like literally the next week lives were everywhere. Yeah, so. Yeah. Doing it and earning money in the way that they can.
That's really dope.
Yeah, I think it's dope as hell. It almost makes me want to get out there, especially if my face not
be a demon in but a couple of weeks.
People are really like rude, so like they'll like roast people or like kick them off and stuff, so it's not always positive.
Yeah, I've seen Tory Lanez yelling at some people and I'm like, yo, what is going on, son? It's just
exactly. He just really, Tory Lanez is so corny, and this is his little 15 minutes of just like,
this is his 15 minutes. He's so gassed right now.
Yeah.
Oh man. One thing about this though. Shout out to the Respectful Justins, aka Justin Squared. As long as they're not being rude to the women. I don't want to shout out Tory Lanez because sometimes he's just mean from what I've seen.
Yeah.
It seems like he's mean to people who like should have never requested to be in there in the first place, but like just close it. But whatever, your prerogative. Yeah. But one thing I would like to see is like this being done by women.
Yep.
Or by non-binary people or queer people. Like, I would just like to see this model not the same way that we've always seen this model. Like, something that's exciting about the pandemic. Oh, my God. This is such a dark time, bro. But something that's, like, an upside or a glass half full thing to see about this is to see how people are innovative and how people are considering different ideas and considering different ways of change. And I think, like, women-owned or women-led or queer-led strip clubs have been a thing, but not nearly as big as men-owned strip clubs have been a thing. So I'd like to see that more normalized in this abnormal time, because, you know, why not, you know?
That'd be dope. And I have noticed that that's a big space that's not being filled.
Right.
Part of me is just always thinking, like, man, is there a way that I can get in on that without actually, like, I don't know if I would ever do it, but, like, definitely to give people that platform, that would be dope. And I just, the fact that you said that, that's exactly what I was thinking too. Just because I even when I was reading that he was gathering the money and distributing it, I was glad that he was also putting their names up, because I can see that being him taking advantage and kind of.
Yeah, I like that too.
But it'd be nice for it to be women supporting women and not just, like, creating that community under, but also just, like, making it or making that space.
Right. And where you're, like, dancing for, I mean, I'm sure dancers don't necessarily discriminate, but it might be a different environment for, like, let's say a non-binary person to dance for queer people, you know? Like, the reactions are going to be different. Like, it's not always going to be like, oh, look at her ass. Like, maybe they'll, like, put some respect on somebody's pronouns or something like that, you know?
That'd be dope. Yeah. That'd be dope. I don't know, man.
It sounds like you're going to start it, son. You got a lot of, there's a lot of gumption behind your voice right now.
It's really, like, I'm sitting here like, man, I don't know. This sounds like something we could do. I'm just saying.
I support it.
That was kind of just like obviously every aspect of life is being affected, but specifically work that involves you being close with other people and social distancing has, like, fucked up a lot of things for people. It's just interesting to see how, like, one avenue may be not necessarily doing the best, but they're finding other ways to still make sex work a valuable option. So yeah, that's sex work in the time of the Rona.
Wow, that was really interesting. Thank you. What a time to be alive.
I read something recently where it was just like, I really wish I wasn't living through a historical event. And I'm not gonna lie, even though we're making light of it and we're, like, trying to find information, it's like, man, I would love to be reading this in a history book and not, like, here right now. But we're making it work.
Yeah, I also would not love to be here. Also, I feel like we've been here many times, not in pandemic specifically, but living through, like, major historical events since we were, like, 9 years old. So that's really fun. But once again, glass half full about that now is that we're, like, also documenting it, you know?
Yeah.
Like, as media makers. And I think that's really fucking cool, because maybe 100 years ago, like, there were Black people documenting stuff, obviously. But those efforts were a lot more difficult at those times.
Yeah.
So this is cool. It's not cool, but this right here is cool. That's a party on the weekend. That's a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. She love a party on the weekend. Let's move on to our next segment that we like to call A Word From Us Kids. That we like to call Fuck Me. It is about our sexual, romantic, and dating lives. And this week, like every other week, I keep you updated on the How Samantha Got Her Virtual Groove Back Challenge. Formerly How Samantha Got Her In Real Life Groove Back Challenge, but that has been hampered.
We don't do that no more.
Yes, not for a couple of months. But yeah, this is the challenge in which I go on a virtual, socially distant date every week, and I report back to you how it is. On this week's date, I did another drink and draw, because I'm not creative. And this week I drew Garnet from Steven Universe. Rodeca saw it earlier on Instagram Live. And then I got my period and I was incapacitated for the whole week. So I didn't do anything else with anybody else. And as promised, I have a cute virtual date idea for all of the listeners. This week's date idea is to put on a digital MTV Cribs episode and tour each other places. So it can be your bedroom. It could be your whole entire house or your whole entire apartment. It can be your favorite room in your space, like your office or whatever. I don't know where you live, your backyard, your porch, your fire escape, whatever, that you feel comfortable sharing with another person. So this is how it works. You FaceTime your person, You have to put on 90s to 2000s era hip hop because it's MTV Cribs, obviously. Then you start up the tour, you do it, whatever, and then you trade places. The good things about this is that, one, it's silly and ridiculous, and that's fucking fun. And then two, it's actually intimate because you're opening yourself up intimately to your date and you're sharing the intimate connections that you have with items in your space. So if I was touring Big Crucifix Studios for somebody, I would show them this plant that's on its last fucking legs that I accidentally put my phone on and now there's a crease in the leaf and I'm like, oh shit, that really killed this nigga. I would show them the four coffee cups that I've been too lazy to bring to the sink. Two hard drives. That's how you know who the fuck I am. I'd be out here making media and shit. I would show them the bun and cheese scraps from the bun that I made yesterday. I would show them all these thick bitches that I'm drawing lately. And I would show them the wigs and they would know a little bit more about me.
They know a lot about you.
Okay, they would know everything about me. And they'd be like, this bitch has issues. Is she okay? What would you show them?
In my room, I have very stereotypical, it's like a cloth thing, like a mosaic or whatever. It's the sun and the moon. You know how like people have that, like Instagram girls or whatever, or like Tumblr. Yeah. I have one of them. I think it's cool.
Yours is pretty. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Mm-hmm. I've had people roast me for it. Chris definitely roasted me. He was like, "What is this basic shit?" And I was like, "Yeah, yeah, whatever. Shit. That's fine."
He's like, "Is this your live, laugh, love poster?"
It really is. And that's why I'm like, yeah, I understand. I have, I guess the favorite part, well, I guess like my favorite part of my room is my windowsill because it's really long. So I have a lot of plants on it as well as like my books. I have like something from Steven Universe. I have my records on there. It's all in my window. So I definitely like go through that and I'd probably have like a story for everything and we could spend some time on that. I have my video games, so that's just like, yeah, you know, I got Kingdom Hearts, stuff like that. And then, yeah, it was just kind of probably a lot of my stuff is laid out. So I think we'd probably talk about that. I have incense and my frankincense that I burned. Shout out to Sam. But yeah, I have a lot of stuff in there that I feel like would be very personal. So that's a really good idea. Just, you know, usually when someone comes over, you have that conversation. So even just showing it to them, they're like, ooh, what's that? And they get to know you more. Yeah, that's cute.
Yeah, if you all do that at home, let me know, because that's fucking sweet.
Yeah, that's cute.
All right, what's going on in your life?
For me, it just as I don't want to drone on and on about it, but I think I touched a bit on, like, my anxiety and how it's being affected by the Rona, and I didn't realize, I guess I kind of tried to minimize it, because I was just like, oh, okay, like, I'm anxious about a lot of stuff, but it's usually outside triggers, like me walking outside and something happening and me going like, man, that was scary, and stuff like that, or just, like, feeling really overwhelmed. I'm not used to like being home where I usually feel the most safe or being at Chris's house where I feel pretty safe. Notice I was not the most safe. I'm just kidding. But anyway, it's just like being indoors.
He keeps telling you don't touch that juice.
Don't touch that shit, nigga. You're not safe here. No, but it's just like usually being indoors, I don't get triggered by much. Maybe my own thoughts, but lately I've noticed I read articles so that I can keep myself abreast of like everything that's going on, but like I immediately my everything starts like clenching, my chest feels tight when I start reading about like just how bad this pandemic has become. And it's just like every time I start reading an article, it's so physical that it's become something that I really can't hide anymore. And it's not that I was intentionally hiding it, it's just something that I always kind of shouldered myself, or if I talked about it on the show, I shared it with you guys, but not really with the person that I was dating, only because I kind of like try and present myself as a person who has it all together, even though I'm like always like, oh my god, what the fuck is going on? But I feel more empowered in this relationship, or just in this stage in my life where I don't feel like I should or really can at this point hide how things affect me. Right. So I feel it's been kind of difficult for me just breaking down that wall and being like, I'm having an anxiety attack right now, or saying like, yo, like, I know nothing is happening, but I'm freaking out because it's nighttime and I'm outside and someone's yelling and I don't know what's going on. Like, and it's been very vulnerable for me, because I don't know, you can, like, sex is vulnerable for me. I feel like that's when I'm the most in control. But when I'm literally like spiraling out of control, that's the most vulnerable that I feel. So it's been very like, hey, I'm going through it. And like now I could, he's, because he knows that certain things affect me, he's actually looking at me and he's going like, are you okay? Like, I can tell something is wrong with you. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm actually freaking out right now. And just feeling that level of support is very different for me. And it's very like, I don't know, I guess I was very skeptical on the effect because it wasn't happening in my face like a lot of people. But even just reading about it, even thinking about like the people that I know who have been infected, who have passed away, like it's just very, very heavy on my conscience. And to, because of the fact that we are also in this enclosed space together a lot of the time, because now I actually go home, I walk, I don't interact with people, and then I walk over here because we're very close to each other. So we're trying, because we found ourselves like, it's not, everyone's like, oh my God, you want to be your partner. And I don't want to minimize how people feel when they're alone. But at the same time, it's not always the best thing. And like, when I had asked them what was different about us, because I wanted to make sure like I touched on that because people have asked about us. Mm-hmm. He was like, we argue a lot more. And that's because we are sharing the space and it's just like so intense. So it comes with its ups and downs. But I think that's definitely a positive thing to start talking about my anxiety and my depression. I definitely had a really low point last week and I was here and there was nothing I could do because he wasn't here. And then he came back to the house and I was just in it and very much sobbing and very much emotionally overwhelmed. And it's just, I guess, talking to a person, talking to my family, because I've been trying to do that. There's times, there was 3 days where I was just in my room, not moving at all. And I just like came out and I told my sister, I was like, look, I was just like really not myself. I wasn't feeling myself. And just having those conversations with people outside of Inner Hope Uprising, because in a lot of ways, you guys know a lot more about me than people that I talk to regularly outside of my co-hosts and my IHU family. So it's just because I don't have any place to go, like, because sometimes I'll just run out and go somewhere. I don't have that anymore. It's really forcing me to confront my own feelings, but also leaning on people who I know. So it's been different. I just want people to know that if you're also experiencing stuff, you're not alone. It's okay, because just surviving at this point is enough. So, but in a positive thing, I have had sex.
Okay.
And I have been masturbating as well. So it's been a good time on the flip side.
There's that duality. Constant duality.
Make sure I ended with, you know, kind of round, go full circle, because last week I was going through it 2 weeks ago.
Still beat though.
Yeah, you know.
Situations. Yeah. Oh, I thank you for sharing that. And I'm glad that you are feeling open enough to like talk to the people who you share space with, because that's important. Like,
yeah.
There's like a whole ecosystem in a place that you don't realize, mm-hmm. unless you're forced to like confront it. But like, yeah, you are definitely a part of that ecosystem, and the people who you're sharing space with are also a part of that ecosystem. So we're going to move on to our next segment. It is called Fuck You. It is the segment about your sexual, romantic, and dating lives. If you would like to ask us for some advice, share your hotels, rant against the white cishet patriarchy, you can send your thoughts to ihupodcast@gmail.com. And we would like for you to include your pronouns so that we, you know, use the right pronouns. Also, because we are in the future, you can leave us a voicemail. So we'll play it and respond to it on the show. If you call us at 404-491-9158, once again, that's 404-491-9158. I do not answer the phone. You are going straight to voicemail. So if you are one of those phone shy people, there's no fear here, because I'm phone shy and I don't want to talk to you, but I do want to hear from you. So this week we actually do have a voicemail, and it's from KJ, and the topic is dealing with your family while sheltering in place.
Hi everyone, this is KJ. Any pronouns are fine, I don't really care. But I wanted to talk about cutting off family and what that may or may not do to your mental health, because let's be real, sometimes family is the core of all your problems. If you hear cars, I'm sorry, I'm walking my dog. So with this quarantine, lots of people are stuck inside with people who are the core of their depression or anxiety or really anything that could be triggered by their family. And me, with my mom, it's kind of a situation where, in this case, she's probably bipolar. So one day it could everything be go down to dust, and the other day everything could be great. So this is more of just a word of advice to everyone who's dealing with that situation. everything will be fine. You'll be okay. As soon as this quarantine is out, you'll be able to get out of the house more or move back to your apartment. I don't know what your situation is. But it's a rough patch everyone's going through right now, but everything will be great. All right. Bye. Thank you.
Thank you, KJ. Aww. Sorry that you're going through a rough patch.
I live with a family member that our relationship can go one way or the other a lot of the time. And that was something initially that I dreaded. And I know that I was here at Chris's house a lot more because I was avoiding having to be in that bubble with someone. And I was fortunate enough that I did have the ability to go somewhere else. But when I was back home, it was very, very anxiety inducing because I'm just like, I don't want to have to be here. I don't want to have no other place to go. So I understand that fear and that feeling of just like, wow, I can't escape. But just that reminder, and this is a great message, just to be like, you know what, I can control certain things about my space. If you do have a room that you can kind of go into and just be like, you know, this is mine and this is temporary that I'm stuck in this situation, or just finding things that comfort you in general. Usually you can make your own happiness in whatever way, even if that person is there kind of looming over you. Maybe if you cannot interact with them. Some situations are worse where they're like abusive or things like that and you can't really escape, but it will be over eventually. Just like trying to keep yourself as sane as possible is so important. But yeah, I know that feeling of just like, man, this is not something that I wanted. And usually I can go somewhere and I can't. But just know, you know, especially if you're listening to this, just know we're here with you. And that if you have people in your life that you can talk to, it's definitely important to reach out and make sure you're not just trying to bear this whole burden on your shoulders. Because it can be a lot.
For sure. For sure. Yeah, I definitely agree with all of that. And my heart definitely goes out to heart and thoughts go out to people who are dealing with that, because there are some people who I would not like to be sheltered with and thinking about that.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely to reinforce some of the things that Rodeca said. Yeah, if you're sheltering with someone who is abusive, it sucks right now. It definitely does suck right now. I'm going to put the National Domestic Hotline number in chat in the show notes. And hopefully at this time, you're able to reach out to them if you're in a situation like that, and you can create a safety plan on what's the best way for you to remain safe while you're sheltering in place. So, I mean, sometimes that might literally look like they might suggest that you leave if you're like in imminent danger. And sometimes it might look like avoiding certain rooms that have dangerous objects in them and things like that. So if that's something that you need, the resources will be in the show notes for you. Other advice, exactly what you said, definitely connects with loved ones who are outside of where you're sheltering. So like your friends, your other family members, FaceTime them, keep up that connection so that you know that, you know, there are non-toxic people in your life who love and care about you. The same thing with like going in your room thing, like that's setting a physical boundary, but also you might need to set some verbal boundaries and stick to them. So like if you're sheltered with someone who is a conspiracy theorist, or if you're sheltered with someone who is like constantly sharing bad news and it's affecting you, like you said, hearing all of the news is like putting you in a bad place. Something you might have to do and say is like, I don't have the space to engage with you on that right now, and like tell that person that you're sheltered with, or those people that you sheltered with, that they can't keep coming to you with that information, because it's detrimental to your mental health. And that's something that like everybody needs to like do the plain thing where you put your oxygen mask on first and then you can worry about other people. Like Rodeca and KJ said, remind yourself that this is temporary. And like Rodeca said, do things that make you feel good, like create your own happiness. So whether that be like cooking, dancing, Tory Lanez or the Justin's fucking Instagram lives. Maybe it is you going on Instagram live with your butt plug. If you can, like KJ was walking their dog, step outside, go for a walk. If you can actually maintain social distance from people, do your drink and draws, listen to podcasts, Netflix, books, all that kind of stuff. Like escape into your own world as much as possible and as much as you can. And that's it. Everybody, hopefully be safe, be as happy as you can. And we love you guys.
We do.
Yes, we do. If this episode made you laugh, helped you learn something, made you feel good, made you question yourself in a good way, or positively moved you in any sense, please leave us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher And let everyone you know that you love these hoes. We appreciate all of you.
And if you would like to follow us on social media, you can do so at Inaho Uprising without the G on Twitter, Inaho Uprising on Instagram and Facebook. You can join our Facebook group by searching Inaho Uprising Community. That is CUMMUNITY. Head over to InahoUprising.com to sign up for weekly goodies via our newsletter, Fairho, or check out our merchandise. And if you would like to follow me, Rodeca, personally, you can at The Darkest Timeline on Instagram and Existent Crisis on Twitter.
And you can follow me at SlamRid on Instagram and Twitter, and Carmen San Diego for old travel and maybe new food photos. Maybe I'll put the bun that I made up on
there. Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah. And before we wrap up, once again, reminder, we're taking next week off. We'll be back with new episodes weekly, April 29th. Everybody have a great week.
Bye.